It is 5 o'clock in New York City. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haftah Selassie, will return next week at 2 a.m. Saturday morning. And stay tuned for this program. It is Hour of the Wolf with Jim Frein. How are you doing, Jim? I hope you're good. And thank you all. Where are we?
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a regular program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and related fields of endeavor. This morning, an interview recorded about 3 years ago with Jack Womack on his book, Flying Saucers Are Real. But before that, a review from Dan Persons.
I'm Dan Persons, and this is my very brief Hour of the Wolf review. Very brief, cause the show don't got a lot of time now, and every second counts. The new Korean horror comedy Zombie for Sale, now available on home vid. It's a lot of fun. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan. Okay, let's dig a little deeper. So the family running a crummy little gas station in a broken downtown discovers the key to eternal youth. Get bit by a zombie. And fortunately, they've got a cute-as-puppy-dog zombie, played by Jung Ga-ram, stashed away in a garage. Soon enough, the town's largely septuagenarian population, which may be some kind of commentary on what's happening to small towns in South Korea, are throwing fistfuls of cash the family's way and reaping the benefits. This, of course, will not go well. You can't have a zombie apocalypse film without a zombie apocalypse, after all. Debuting director Lin Min-jae puts a lot of style into his production with some cool framing and camera moves and good choreography and cutting in the action scenes. Even better, for a bunch of essentially failed grifters who are frequently at odds with each other, the central family becomes pretty adorable in their struggles to survive the disaster of their own making. I particularly liked the sister, played by Soo Kyung Lee, who redeems herself for all the pet bunnies she's killed by taking better care of her pet zombie. Plus, she gets to play a damn clever send-up of the old movie cliche of the child trying to set her pet deer free. Just this time, she's setting free a very confused zombie. This is less the tart humor of Shaun of the Dead and more just pure silliness, with director Min-jae dubbing in a toy xylophone as the lights of the town come on one by one and superimposing words onto characters' mouths as they shout at each other over a distance. And there's a bit of distinctive South Korean romanticism, particularly in a sequence where a truckload of fireworks gets ignited and everybody, zombies included, stare up at the sky in wonder. I tend to lean toward the position that it's time to put the Walking Dead genre to bed for good, but if Zombie for Sale is any indication, there are still some clever ideas left in the field. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
Thank you, Dan. Given the Pentagon's recent release of limited information about what we have known as flying saucers, I thought it would be appropriate to rebroadcast an interview that I did about 3 years ago with Jack Womack. Jack was born in Lexington, Kentucky in 1956. He is married with one daughter and lives in New York and lives in New York City. He has written 7 novels, Random Acts of Senseless Violence, Heathern, Ambient, Terraplane, Elvisy, Going, Going, Gone, and 1 work of nonfiction, Flying Saucers Are Real. This interview was conducted in December of 2017 and begins with a segment of what was then Jack's latest book and his first work, of nonfiction.
The flying discs as I knew them. One summer day in 1964, I turned on Lexington's local TV morning show. The hostess dressed in a style one part Derby Party, one part Christmas Cracker. The host flashed the shins of an albino Rocket each time he crossed his legs. Rather than horses that morning, they raved about a new paperback, Frank Edwards' Strange World. As I write this, I am looking at the very copy of Strange World my grandmother bought me an hour later, plucked from the black metal paperback rack at Bruxell Drugs on East High Street. It is entry number 1 in the library I went on to build over 40 years, long called Human, All Too Human. I read the book twice that afternoon, believing the unbelievable. The Monster Apes of Oregon, the Loch Ness Monster, the Barbados Coffins, Poltergeists, the Man They Couldn't Hang, Plagues of Mold, Glowing Purple Blobs in the Middle of 26th Street in Philadelphia, and, as per the back blurb, Who... or what, painted Remember Pearl Harbor on Indiana sidewalk 2 years before the infamous attack. And throughout the text, accounts of flying saucers. This was Edward's last compilation of outre tales prior to Flying Saucers' Serious Business, or rather UFOs, the au courant term by the 1960s. To a mid-century child with curious mind yet no interest in science fiction writing, even the implications of a purple blob at a street somewhere in Philadelphia stirred thoughts of UFOs, their origins, their pilots, their languages. If proven, there were possibilities there. Flying saucers inspired in me that same sense of wonder about which my friends in science fiction speak. Both were ways to see beyond the neighborhood. The literature of the flying saucer... Outer space contains planets, stars, wonders. Venus, Mars, Clarion, Vulcan, crosses on the moon, thunderstones. But inner space? Conspiracy theories, the true meaning of lights in the sky, spiritual messages, government distrust, the escapades of dark-suited men, inferior races, eugenics, the cosmic Jew, fantasies fascist or murderous, sexual imaginings, confessions of lonely souls, and choate attempts to understand one's perfect personal visions, spectacularly pointless hoaxes, folk myth, psychological insights, poetry, the perfect lunacy of holy fools. The literature of the flying saucer is the literature of the alien most familiar to us.
Today's date is Friday, November 4th. In the afternoon, in Morningside Heights, and you just heard Jack Womack reading from his new book. It's overdue that I am able to say it's a new book. Flying Saucers Are, that's an underscore, are real, which some people no doubt always knew and will be very disappointed to find out how real they are. Or aren't, perhaps. It's quite an industry, isn't it?
It certainly has been, at least during the last 50 years of the 20th century.
Yeah.
I mean, from the moment the first ones were seen in 1947 and quickly became, you know, picked up by the newspapers. And so they were seen on Friday, and then by Sunday, the term flying saucers had already been coined, and the story had gone around the world at that point. It was a very early example of viral media.
Yeah.
It was just done in the, you know, from one reporter, from one radio reporter to the other around the world. It would then get picked up by the press, and then those would be issued, and the press would copy from other newspapers. And before you knew it, the story had passed around. Even that's as effectively as, you know, just within, say, 10 years ago. I mean, as,
oh, I mean, even more Art Bell, his Coast to Coast radio show, is a nightly, you know, after Long John Neville had so much fun with it.
Oh, Long John Neville had a wonderful time with it from the recordings I've heard.
Oh, yeah, so. Two of his regular guests were Lester Del Rey and Frederick Pohl. To guffaw, especially Lester.
Right.
You know, he would chide. He wouldn't guffaw. He would chide.
Right.
Long John. And,
For even having on the nuts.
I don't think one of them put any credence into anything, but it made great radio.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, completely. I think Jackie Gleason was on a couple of times, too.
Was he? Really?
I think he was. Like, he was actually, he was of the school that didn't believe in contactees. So he would be brought on to say, so when you met Gord from the planet Venus, what did he explain to you about the atmosphere?
Yes.
Well, I mean, he would actually ask really sensible questions from a skeptical point of view.
Right.
But, you know, at the same time, I mean, he built his house in the shape of a flying saucer upstate. Did you know that?
No, I had no idea.
Yes, because he was a huge UFO believer, had a huge, big library at the time. I'd love to see what was in that.
I had no idea.
His house is somewhere in upstate New York. It's like between here and Albany.
For some reason, I always feel in my head, I think of him as being in Florida.
Well, that's the show was filmed out of Miami because they would take the train down
Westinghouse Network?
No, it was on CBS. It may have started on the Westinghouse Network, but it was on CBS till, you know, it went off the air in the mid-60s.
Yeah, so Westinghouse, which became Metromedia,
part of
Channel 5, would have been
which eventually
in New York.
The great channel that showed karate movies every Saturday.
Yes, exactly.
The one great purpose it served. Yes.
Was there another? I think they had a great children's show that I may have watched.
Yeah, and Channel 9 had Million Dollar Matinee.
So. Million Dollar Movie.
Million Dollar Movie.
Yes, with the theme for Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
First time I saw Gone with the Wind, I said they got that from Channel 9.
And then they just, like, on Thanksgiving, you'd always count on watching the Macy's Parade and then watching the giant gorillas.
Absolutely.
So it was all three I have, and sometimes I do that. I'll throw in all three just on Thanksgiving while cooking's going on, just to get that real nostalgic feeling.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so I got interested in flying saucers when I was 8 years old. And just...
And where were you living?
I was living in Lexington, back in Kentucky, where I grew up. And, you know, I just, like, I went to, the Rexall was in walking distance of my grandmother's house, so I'd walk around the corner. It was a little shopping, you know, it was a little 20s shoppy area that had been, it was still in great shape in the 60s. Had a movie theater and a couple, and a 5 and 10 cent store that had wooden floors and trays with the toys in them.
Oh, I love those. I live for those stores.
And there was an indie meat marketplace, and then there's Rexall's. And that's where every week there'd be new comics and new paperback books.
I assume a soda fountain.
There was initially. It was gone by the late 60s.
Oh.
I used to go to my mother worked in a building, the Dunn building, which housed Dunn Drugs. And they were old school. And they had a soda fountain that I used to eat at all the time. Every time I'd visit her at her office, that's where I'd go have lunch. Usually your basic cheese sandwich sliced diagonally, so or something else from like so not exact not as old as old timey in its own way as the Ratner's menu in the kitchen, but just more like fried bologna sandwiches and that sort of thing.
Fried bologna, wow! I have fried salami. I've never tried to fry bologna.
It works. You need to cut. It's like with Taylor ham. You need to cut through the. Each end four quarters.
Yeah,
you know, and then that way it won't curl up. You know, as it's cooking.
Right.
So, anyway, how did we get on the cooking again? Anyway, that's true. This book has multiple aspects to it. It has nostalgia, as many people have said. Peter Straub told me that he just loved. You know, brought back such memories. Michael Derrida. Said the same in his review.
Yeah, he did a wonderful review in the Washington Post.
That was a startlingly good review.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be doing a the show is moving down there and moving there sometime next year, and they'll have another show like they had in August.
So describe the show.
The show is just like covers of the actual books, in many cases, of hanging from the walls of just the various flying saucer books from the collection. Just, I Rode a Flying Saucer, or Flying Saucers on the Moon, or just mostly all the ones from the 50s and early 60s, which was, of course, the classic period for UFO illustrations.
Yeah.
And there were some blow-ups of those, notably those sexy saucer people, which everyone seemed to want to have their photo taken in front of. Can't imagine why.
Okay.
And, but also just have them out and then...
saucer selfies sounds like a...
There were lots of people who looked like they had come off of flying saucers. George Adamski would have been able to have written three more books if he'd seen some of the characters that showed up. But... it was very successful, and, it had my name in the window and just the exhibit, and that was pleasing in a very unexpected way. But what I've really gotten the best is this, I have yet to get a bad review. Even Nature, which had some dubious things to say about the format, still gave it a very long, quotable, blurb, basically. Mm-hmm. And I got Derrida's and everything, but then they gave me to do publicity associated with it. Paris Review had me write an article on flying saucer cover art of the 50s,
ooh,
which is wonderful. So I've made Paris Review finally. I just I had to go through it with a flying saucer out. Just so that was very gratifying.
Who knew that's what it took to get on the flying saucer
exactly,
beat?
Exactly. So I've been doing this, and this has been a long time background interest, of mine. People would always say, "Don't you read science fiction? Don't you?" And I'd say, "Well, I watch the movies, but don't you read it? Don't you read it?" I said, "No," but at the time, this had a somewhat shadier association than science fiction did in the 60s.
Yeah.
Because in the 50s, it probably either one would get the same remarks. And it's amazing the overlap between a lot of science fiction covers of the period and the flying saucer books of the period. In there's the one which I call the greatest book on flying saucers ever, on a non-flying saucer book. The flying saucers are real.
Yes.
Which is one reason why we took that title. But if that isn't a science fiction cover...
Yeah, and that looks like it's straight out of Astounding Stories.
Yeah, exactly. Because they all have that inherent thing.
Did they have the same artists? You would think.
I've looked him up. He definitely did Flying Saucer. He did Mysteries. He also did, he was like one of these jack of all trades.
Yeah,
so.
But any pulp-like.
And pulp-like, yeah, pulps basically and that sort of thing. But that's perfect. A lot of those covers.
I'm surprised they didn't get some Ed M. Schwiller or Chesley Bonestell.
Well, that's the thing. They probably went as cheap as they could on these.
Yeah.
That was the first Flying Saucer book. And no one had any idea how they do. And it sold, something like 500,000 copies, I think. Just, which wasn't chicken feed even in 1950.
Right.
So, then other publishers would pick it up. So there's this huge interest in people seeing the most between 1947 and around 1955. That's when the report on unidentified flying objects came out and essentially said, nope, there are none. But it wasn't until 1969 with the scientific study of unidentified flying objects, the old Condon Committee.
Right.
Basically wrote finis from the scientific viewpoint of flying saucers. In between, you had another flap. You'd had the 1965 to 1968 flap, which included everything from Barney and Betty Hill's abduction in New Hampshire, the first actual abductees we have record of,
them. I shouldn't say I met them. The best job ever that I had at WBAI was engineer.
Right.
And so I would be engineering other people's shows. So somebody else, I don't recall who, it was not Margot,
right,
had them live on the air.
Oh, wow.
And so I was the engineer.
Right.
So I say I met people when, in fact, I haven't, but I was in the same room
at
them, as close to them as I am to you. So,
yeah. I have one of the books in the collection was autographed by her and signed with a little note to a friend.
Yeah.
So, and her husband died a long time before she did, I think. He had a heart attack or something, poor guy. So, but they were the first abductees, and as opposed to contactees, who usually just saw the golden Skymen coming down, the super Aryans, you know, and the hair just glistening, and, you know, fancy ski pants, and, you know, just and talking about, and hi, my name is Erkin. Mm-hmm. You know, for some reason, I think it probably later explained my taste for Ed Wood movies, just the grotesque stupidity of it attracted me as a teenager. And then, as I got older, I continued to collect them, because at that point, and I was just watching to see how many different ways people could convince themselves of something or believe anything, essentially.
That's one of the most amazing things, isn't it? How sincere the abductees and contacted people. The one person who I've met a couple of times who's close friends with Margot Adler, of course, is one of the most influential in more recent years, and that would be the fantasy and horror writer Whitley Strieber, and there's no question in his sincerity.
Right. That's what Ellen has told me. There's just like, you know, so obviously, but then my question was, what makes the believer the believer?
And
you know,
the answer is that awkward silence we just had.
It's the awkward silence that you have when you ask the question in other contexts, in a spiritual context or any sort of context such as that. Because it's just very well, I mean.
But
just,
the difference between a spiritual thing is that spiritual people have faith.
But there are a number of like overlaps, of course, with religion and flying saucers. Saucers are the work of the devil. That's one. Satanic terror. But then there's
that's others. Sort of an ongoing.
But then there's others.
So much is the work of the devil.
But then there are whole religions created from them. The Unarians, of course, with Ruth and Orman.
Right.
I'd
forgotten them.
Oh yeah. Well, that's because after when she finally died, you know, they couldn't have her on the Tonight Show anymore. She was always a delight to see. And there are, of course, you've seen the pictures of her with her charioteers.
Yes.
And here, which is one of the greatest photos of all time.
Yeah, we should explain that while this book is filled with text and a lot of great writing, it is, as everybody pictures. Looking at the radio can tell, it's a coffee table book. What size do we call it? It's not bedrock size.
In the old days, you'd call it duodecimo. You would call it the... there's one that starts with Q. Quarto. You'd call it a quarto.
Oh, it's a quarto.
I think so because a folio would be, you know, closer to like this, like here. This one would be a folio.
Okay, everybody look at your radios.
Yeah, the face of Lincoln. All the known photographs at that time. So, but yeah, but this would be a quarto.
Now, I've seen a Shakespeare folio, first folio, so
right,
I know.
Yeah.
I know so, what that looks like.
Yeah, but it's hard to remember the next one. Then you have an octavo, and then...
Which would be an eighth.
Right, and then you have duodecimo, which is the...
which would be half.
Yeah, the half.
Half a page.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's what these terms all mean.
Exactly. I'm convinced.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We're looking at a photo of hula girls and high above what seems to be a lens flare or a scratch on lens.
It looks like a scratch on the lens.
Something, yeah.
But it's also undeniably, being a scratch on the lens, it's undeniably a flying saucer.
Well, undeniably. And then you have the other.
But I can't deny it.
Then you have the other photos that where you can see the pie plate being lifted and thrown up into the sky, and you can only see the blur as it sort of comes back to Earth.
Yeah.
Then you can see the ones that were tied in place from the unseen.
The Ed Wood method.
Exactly. And then I don't know how they ever did the one with the smoke.
They fix it in post. I was a hobbyist in photography.
Right.
And the answer, I think, is in the darkroom. You could take a little piece of like colored plastic, right. Like you would, you know, like a gel, and you'd put that on a stick. And as you are doing the exposure onto the plate, you can just sort of make little circles with that and make little cloudy formations. Because I once made clouds. I didn't do it very long. I only did it in camp.
Right, right.
But I made clouds in photographs where there were no clouds. And I know that that's a real photograph of flying saucer, but... Well, I could do that in the dark room.
Yeah, exactly.
During the exposure process. Not that anybody would ever do that. Not that anybody would ever try to convince people fraudulently.
No. Now, the interesting thing has been since everyone has been carrying now a phone with a photograph with a camera in their pocket, how the number of flying saucer photos of Bigfoot, of the Loch Ness Monster have all plummeted.
I mean, isn't that interesting?
Them, but somehow there does seem to be
As photography has become ubiquitous.
And you can usually say, I wish I had a camera. You know, you're always saying this, like, oh, I have a camera. Boom, and you've got it.
Yeah.
So that just does not seem to happen very often. So,
yeah, it's a curious thing.
It's faded. Well,
I never thought about that.
Yeah, but. I think it's just like this just proves, you know, you have to figure, well, it's probably happened, but you just haven't seen where.
Well, it just means that now that we all have cameras, the flying saucers are staying away.
Exactly.
That's the obvious logical answer.
Of course, that is. But, of course, think of the dash cams in Russia, the one that caught the meteor coming down.
Yes.
Which was truly a spectacular sight.
That was an amazing... There were even two...
Yeah.
Films. I mean, they are so ubiquitous, and in Russia they might have even more desire to have stuff than is needed here, and it's desperately needed here.
Oh,
there were actually two dash cam pictures of that meteor.
Right. And you can actually look at it and see similarities to older photos that may have still possessed that maybe quality to it, or basic, or more like, what is this? You know, it's obviously not a flying saucer, but what is it?
Well, that's what makes it unidentified.
Exactly. And then what became interesting with flying saucers...
I don't think anybody's ever had an IFO, an identified flying saucer.
Oh, I've seen the term, Dan. The term is in a number of those books. Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, after the Condon Report's release, then what happened was flying saucers... It was an early case of the demographic splitting. And so you had suddenly the cattle mutilator crowd. Who believed in cattle, UFOs mutilating cattle. You had the abductee crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You had the crowd who started asking questions about the moon, since it was clear that no one lived there. Then the question was, our spaceship moon? We never went to the moon. You know, the moon is hollow. Just all of these, you know, loony things. And then the resurgent of the sort of loopiness that you'd seen in earlier periods from the reprints of all the old New Age stuff going back to the 20s. And then the development of cults in the 70s, and stronger cults. And that was arising also partially out of Manson, since the crime, you know, crime and this, all of these subjects overlap. By the time of the 80s, it was like techniques are already starting to be applied that would result in the sort of alternate reality that we had by the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a perceived alternate reality that some people live in. And the thing is, you can't live in a true because there can be no alternate reality.
Right.
So, and this is what is clearly one of the things that's splitting the Republicans. I mean, it serves them right, but they've taken it way too far. They took it way too far. Trump, I'm just terrible. I just want to get...
I'm
going to be there at 6:05. I'm going to be there at 6:05, if not 6, to be...
It is one of the scariest days.
Yeah.
The approach of that date is so frightening.
Right, I know.
No matter what assurances the New York Times gives us.
No, I know. Oh, God, no, not at all. I just like, and so, and I've been trying to think back and compare it to see if this year actually was worse than 1968, which up to now was the sixth worst one I could recall. But there weren't any assassinations this year.
No, so far. Just character assassinations.
Enormous amounts of character assassination. Just really, and character assassinations against the army, against, you know, individual, you know, POWs, against the Gold Star families. And they're just going to keep going after the election either way, because it's like Trump came along and turned over every single rock in the backyard.
Yeah, I've been calling it for a year now, Weimar, New York.
Yeah, so
it really has. I mean, my parents lived through the Weimar era in Germany. My father in Nuremberg, my mother in Frankfurt and Prague. Mm-hmm. So they were teenagers, or even younger, a little younger than teenagers.
But they know what to look for. They recognize, because it's just like, because as soon as he got away with calling McCain, you know, a loser, you know.
Yeah.
As they let him get away with that. And
McCain didn't, but the media did.
No, but the media did.
But Trump is one of them. Trump is a media guy.
Yeah, he's a TV guy.
And my own personal theory about Trump,
yeah,
he has no intention of winning. He doesn't want to win. He's a media. He wants to build a media empire, and the whole purpose of his running in this election is so that he can now start an empire to rival Murdoch.
That's possibly how he started out, but I think he's taken too much interest in possibilities now.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's his own demagogue. So
I just like, and he's getting, because he's been getting progressively worse and more incoherent, and just. And yet retains so many.
Well, getting worse would follow my theory that he doesn't want to win.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Although this is the frightening thing in the since the FBI entered the political race, right, or at least the director,
right.
Trump has gained.
Yes.
Major points.
Yeah, exactly. They're starting to slip back down again, but he definitely was a rise right after the last weekend.
Yeah.
That was just amazing. I'm waiting to see what they're going to break today, since it's Friday.
Oh, yeah, so, the last Friday before. Yeah.
So I've heard, you know, rumors that's going to be something about Trump that's coming out, but I have no idea, and I doubt it somehow, so.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. Monday wouldn't be too late either, because news cycles are so fast.
Well, I can remember when George W. Bush's drunk driving ticket came up, and that was like the Friday or the Monday before the election. It made no difference. So
no, but the internet was not as ingrained as a news cycle as it is today.
Not at all. I mean, the Talking Points memo only started that year. A lot of the political blogs only started that year because of the election. And just like I remember from what I remember. So, because prior to that, I just remember.
But it still took like a week for Breitbart or somebody like that to get their venom spread around.
Exactly.
And today it's a matter of hours.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
or minutes for that matter.
Yeah, but I mean to totally saturate the American consciousness, it's a matter of hours.
Oh, exactly.
Because, you know, you might be driving somewhere and not checking your a Twitter feed,
and I knew there'd be a tremendous amount of misogyny in the election. What I wasn't expecting to still exist at such strong levels among more people than I would expect was anti-Semitism.
Well, yeah, and the anti-Semitism would be so much worse if it were Sanders running.
Yeah,
which is one reason why I was always convinced Sanders could never win the election. Yeah. I think a woman would have an easier time than a Jew.
Maybe not Hillary. I mean, I think she'll have as hard a time as I can possibly give her.
Well, I mean, but, you know, it's funny how people love and respect her when she holds office, like senator in New York or something like that. And the moment she's running, it's total hatred and you're
a
crook.
Astounding. Yeah, it's really astounding.
But it's no different than the hatred people had for her during what is now called the Clinton years.
Right, yeah.
you know, before the whole Monica Lewinsky thing,
right. Yeah.
They were going after her with Whitewater.
Oh, Evans Foster, the airport in Arkansas.
Rush Limbaugh made a career out of nothing but loathing and so, Hillary Clinton.
So did Drudge, I mean, for that matter. I mean,
yes.
They both did.
Well, Drudge had was aiming as much or more at Bill.
Yeah.
Where Limbaugh focused on Hillary.
Well, yeah, of course, he's a bully. So naturally, you know, whereas, you know,
this is one of the scariest elections of all time. This is the first one that, you know, makes me think. I think if my father were alive, and I don't go on I don't discuss his career on the air,
right,
but he was in the government.
Right.
And I think he would be thinking about going back to Germany or something.
Well, this entire thing, as soon as it became clear what degree the FBI seems to be involved in it, or at least the New York branch.
Yes.
So,
and the director.
And the director. It's just like, this is what
he's brought us back to the days of Hoover.
Yeah, which takes
and he's
some
an
doing.
Obama appointee. That's what I don't.
Well, he's
get is why Obama
he's
got him
because that way Obama could say I appointed a Republican. See,
and look at and what look he got at, for it.
Well, precisely.
You sow what you reap.
Precisely. You wouldn't see
or you other way around.
You wouldn't have seen LBJ do anything like that. I mean,
yeah.
You know, just like, you know, there's party and then there's party. And so, you know, you understand to be loyal, but you've got to be at the same time. And there hasn't been as much wimping out this year as I've seen in some
years. The horrifying thing is how we're still on topic about UFOs with this discussion, because it's all about American credibility.
Exactly. And the thing is, as individual things become less believable, even in reality, in scientific advances, in climate change, and just as these things make themselves evident, it's still like you can stay in the alternate reality that has somehow been created, at least for a partial generation, just before people realize, wait a minute, it floods New York every month now.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. Or people start, you know, just seeing, my Social Security check's been cut in half. Oh, it's only till you see what winds up changing and who knows what that will be.
And even then people look for the alternate reality reasons for those things to have changed.
Right. We deserve it, you know, and that's where it always we deserve it. Trump is like a Berlusconi with teeth. I mean, it's really scary because he's, you know, this basically publicity-hungry, womanizing mogul, or would-be mogul is more the question.
It's more accurate.
I think that my best part of the Democratic convention for me, outside of Michelle, was a brief interview they did with Bloomberg, who showed up, he was a member of the New York delegation, I believe, and they had him on, and Bloomberg demolished him in like 5 minutes, you know, at the time.
As one New York wealthy person.
I'm from New York. Listen, I know this type. He's a con artist.
Yeah.
And Bloomberg was the one who spoke the most directly and most, you know, I mean, I know this type. You know, I'm from New York. This is a con man.
And I'm from New York in wealthy circles.
Yeah, exactly. In the circles that he's never admitted to.
Trump,
I mean, they never let him into the Maidstone. I'm sure they never let him into any of those places.
Yeah.
And just, it pisses him off.
That's why he had to have his own building so he could go in, I guess.
And has his name on giant letters on every one of them.
Although I've heard had some, his name.
Some are being taken down. Some, they're renaming the new ones. Some.
Well, because he doesn't own them.
No, of course not. Other people are
It's been in default on almost all of his property.
Other people are in debt because of him. Well, he's still made out like a bandit. I mean, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, pyramid scheme.
Oh, totally. Totally. I mean, I can't even look at him. Or lately I can look at him and I'm going to see really bad moon rising, as it were. But, you know, but prior to that, I could never look at him without thinking, And your second prize, a set of steak knives, because it's obvious it's boiler room tactics. It was just so, it's like on The Sopranos. It's just like, watch, they're going to break it out. They're going to just, you know, gut it and then run off with the goods and, you know, escape to Argentina.
Yeah. I mean, by the time this airs, which may, with any luck, might be the day after Election Day.
Oh, yes.
We will... I am hoping that we will find out shortly thereafter what Trump's plans have been all along. If my theory that he's only doing this to start building a media empire of his own to rival and, if he can, bury Murdoch.
Right.
And it looks like I think he could succeed at that.
And that would be the, at least for the short term, the safest way to, for things to turn out.
Yes.
That he wouldn't stay in politics. But, I mean, we saw we saw how much power Roger Ailes and Murdoch wield.
And so Ailes now works with Trump.
Of course.
You know, minor detail. Can you imagine Ailes would be, you know, in such a plum position with the Trump empire?
Right. Oh, completely.
And that's what, and I think this is all about media.
Right. Yeah. It's been so media driven this time. And with the media inherently distrusting Hillary because they could never catch her on anything in the 90s.
Yeah.
To a large degree.
Yeah.
And that she didn't divorce Bill, you know.
Yeah.
Because of Monica. And that's like, but they couldn't even impeach him for that. I mean, and now they've talked about, I saw some running out of plan to start.
No, they could impeach, they just couldn't find him guilty.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's true, because there's just no way they could
Because impeach just means to have a trial.
Have the trial, yeah.
Yeah, so, and that's all it was. And when they say he was impeached, it's like, yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah,
and they rely on the fact that most people don't know.
That's true. It means nothing.
It means nothing. It means that the wrong people were able to make an accusation.
Well, I saw that one of
those, true or not.
There was some lower-level Republicans working on signs that basically were saying Hillary should be impeached her first day in office. And for treason. Impeached for treason.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just like, but don't you need to actually be in office to commit treason?
Yeah, right.
Like, so, but...
It's
the alternate world.
The number of people that are credible, that's, to me, the most frightening thing. Oh, it's not Trump. It's the
Mitch McConnells, the Paul Ryans, the ones
it's
that...
very few. It's the low-level people online. I saw a post by a person who I don't personally know in science fiction fandom.
Right.
Put a post on Facebook.
Right.
Echoing. Trying to make it sound reasonable, but echoing all the Trump talking points.
Oh, yeah, right.
And to which my only response was bye-bye, and for the first time ever, I actually unfriended somebody Facebook because I don't use Facebook that much. I use it to publicize the things that I do. Twitter even less.
Yeah, no, exactly.
But
with me, it's the reverse. I use Twitter a lot more, so I'm fairly fast on it. Well, Facebook, I just, you know, I put stuff on there, but I just... It's just sort of the opposite, and I think both of us are lost when it comes to, like, Snapchat.
Yeah.
Or I cannot reach the 18-year-olds, you know, even though my daughter was funny. I was on one day on a podcast called Sweet, and so I said, okay, whatever, you know, it sounds good to me. And I tell my daughter, who's 13, you're on Sweet? Really?
Uh-huh.
Really? You really are famous. I just like, which is like a wonderful thing to hear, actually. So, but yeah, but it was on some sort of Snapchat. Apparently, they have individual programs as well, like on the or podcasts or something.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So,
and Periscope is doing that as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
YouTube was there a long time ago. And Livestream is doing it, and I have the reading series that you will be appearing at.
Oh, excellent.
February.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, you didn't know we're on?
Huh? So February 7th, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, I've got the date down.
People can watch you.
Oh, that's
live cool. And after the fact.
Right. Oh,
there we are a channel.
Very good. I always tried with Ellen to do that at KGB, but she wouldn't even pull the curtains open. I mean, it was always so dark in there, you couldn't film.
No, you can't even take photographs there.
No, it's a shame.
I tried filming there.
It's a shame, too, because they've had some really good people showing up.
Well, we get the audio.
Yeah,
I used to record all of them, and Gordon Linsner initially was recording it for me,
right?
And now he turns it over to Ellen and Matt,
right?
And emails it to me, so I'm still getting it.
Right.
I'm still getting all the... And because my radio show now is Wednesday nights,
mm-hmm.
I really can't go Wednesday evening
right.
to KGB.
Right.
But yeah. mine is on live stream. I have a fellow running... we have three cameras.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not set and forget. We're doing cross...
Right.
Feed, we're doing the whole thing.
Right.
The fellow who is my technical director is a person who produces Pledge Breaks for PBS.
Well, I've had people come over.
Science fiction writer, too.
Very good. I've had people come over here and do, interviews on film. They put on their own film channel,
They
come over. One fellow I know who's an appraiser for Christie's. Came over to show the book collection and everything, and so there's a little 5 minutes.
Yeah, I should be taking a couple of pictures, by the way.
You'd better, so
yeah.
I'm going to try to be selling it this year. So.
Oh, now, yeah, I was thinking, well, to start with, of you.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a good idea.
For the
light should be reasonably good here.
Yeah, this my phone is mm-hmm. not a great camera phone,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it's quite adequate.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's a three-year-old.
Let's see how it looks, because you can always use mine if this one...
Oh, I think I'll get it.
Quality,
if I can find where... the camera app is.
All right.
Okay, and I hope you're all enjoying this on the air. Actually, it looks pretty decent. I will show it to you. Here's a little thing. I like that when you take the picture, you can actually go into your photo collection automatically.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's already online.
Right. Oh, seriously.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, very good. Absolutely. Oh,
the joys of...
Email me the link.
Now it's online.
Okay.
It took that long.
Yeah,
the lighting isn't great.
It's a little blurry.
Yeah. I'll take another. But what I'll do is I'll take a few and then I'll just send you the link to all of them. But it's talking about the ability. That, first of all, that angle will be better. We'll be cutting this out of the recording, by the way. And let me also do a close up now.
Okay.
There we go. I'm not a great photographer with this, but they're so automated.
Right, they are. I know. It's cameras for idiots, I call them, because I can always take great shots with mine.
Yeah, I'm an audio person
about,
myself.
Yeah, I just know how to... I'd have an eye for composition, but beyond that, no real... You know, if I had to go into the dark room, forget it. I'd have no idea what to do.
Yeah, well, I was never good with a camera, but I knew how to use darkroom.
Of course,
the day.
Of course, last year, my daughter, at one point, we were talking about something I referred to, film, and she says, "What's film?"
Right.
And it's just like, it was one of those moments that just bring you up short and realize, oh, they're not going to remember that.
Well, no, they'll know the word.
Yeah.
Everybody who uses their iPhone or their Android device to dial a phone, outside of a movie, they have never seen a phone dial in their life.
Yeah, they just like, usually it's a one click because they've got the number already in the machine.
Oh, I don't bother with that. I just say to my phone
who
to call, and it does it.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, it's we are at that point. And what's more, you can use the command dial Jack Womack.
Right, yeah.
And they're
getting better at picking up voices that even are a little blurry sometimes. So,
yes, the voice recognition has
getting
gone
much better. Yeah, that's
a very
much
long way now. Yeah. Where did I? You've been listening to an interview with Jack Womack. There's about another half hour, and if you would like to hear the entirety of it, send me an email, jim@ourwolf.com,
and I will send you a link where you can get it. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. You have been listening to an interview with Jack Womack, conducted in December of 2017 on his book, Flying Saucers Are Real. We will be back in 2 weeks with an interview with Alma Alexander. In the meantime, be safe, be considerate, and stay well. Good morning.
Listening to WBAI New York, listener-sponsored non-commercial community radio in the summer of 2020. And Pete Seeger is not far from our hearts here at WBAI on this alternative radio station, WBAI New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org, speaking truth to power for more than 60 years.
Life to raise my sons and daughters. Golden sparkles in the foam, and I was not far from home. Sailing down my winding highway, travelers from near and far. Yet I was never alone, exploring all the little byways, sighting all the distant stars. And I was not far from home. Sailing down my golden river, sun and water all my own. Yet I was never alone. Sun and water, old life givers, I'll have them wherever I roam. And I was not far.
The census is a count of everyone in the United States, no matter your immigration status. The census count is how our communities get billions of dollars for programs that we all rely on. You'll be able to do this online or even over the phone. Now let's go through some of the questions.
This looks easy. So the census asks, how many people live in your home? Do you rent or own? Everyone's name, how you're related, age, ethnicity, and home phone number. So me and my wife, we have two kids. I'm 40.
You get the idea. Your information is completely confidential. By law, it cannot be shared with anyone. The census only comes once every 10 years, and 2020 is our chance to get it right.
Tell me a story about your time at WBAI so I can let people know that you, in fact, have returned from retirement.
I retired because I was tired, but I found retirement more tiring than coming to BAI. BAI can be exhausting. Trump's there, and you have to yak about it. And if you're sitting at home, you're just shouting to the walls. When you have a program at WBAI, you can alert them about Donald Trump.
That's David Rothenberg. Tune in to any Saturday mornings from 8 to 10.
This is a well-oiled promotion, please.
This is WBAI, and this is Fred Eagle Smith for WBAI in New York. Stick it in your ear.
Hello, everyone. I'm Christine Blasdale, and I am so happy that you tuned in today, because we have a wonderful guest that's returning to Pacifica Radio, and by popular demand, because man, oh man, Susie Pruden, we blew through some thank you gifts that we offered, an incredible package, and you're back. You're back.
I am back.
You
are. I am back. I am back. I so support this station, and it's so much fun to work with you and to create opportunities for people to enhance their lives. It's just fun. It's exciting.
Well, and this particular reason why you're back right now is because, let's face it too, a lot of people are hurting right now. A lot of people are scared, are worried, and rightfully so in many cases. Maybe they've been laid off or their business has dried up and it's affecting their health, their wellness, their happiness,
their wealth, their finances.
Their finances, exactly.
Their peace of mind.
Exactly. And this is something that I think a lot of our listeners maybe don't know. They do probably know that you're an amazing publisher of the Itty Bitty books, and your bestseller campaigns have been phenomenal. I am very grateful because I can say that I am an actual international Amazon bestseller. Thanks to you.
I'm excited about that. I'm so excited about that. That was so much fun making that happen.
And so much of everything that you do, Susie, is so needed right now in this world. But you just tap into really what people really need in their lives, for in business and in health. And not many people know that you're also a hypnotherapist and have been doing it for many years. Tell our listeners about that.
Well, it's actually a fun story because I've been in business literally since 1965. When I had my fitness company in New York, I used to end every class with a guided imagery session so that I could take people into where they wanted to be from the class. And years go by, sold that business, had another business, Body Mind Technology. And then I met a hypnotherapist in Maui one year, and we became very, very good friends. And I went to her in the 90s to stop smoking. And yes, I used to smoke, but I don't anymore. I can't even remember anymore. So I went to her and I got a session. At the end of the session, she handed me a brochure and she said, if you know anyone who wants to become a hypnotherapist, let me know. I said, I do. She said, good. You've been doing it for 20 years. Now you'll know what you're doing. Which is really, I didn't realize I was doing hypnosis. I was doing guided imagery, which is technically basically the same thing. It's just called different. And there's a different training for each. And so in 1996, I became a hypnotherapist. I put my shingle out immediately, and I started working with people on life changes. And then for 10 years, I ran a company called Positive Changes in Beverly Hills. We actually had 5 offices. We specialized in weight loss. Yeah, it was a big company. And then 2008 came along, and couldn't make my franchise fees, so I was closed up. Thank you. I really blessed the day that I got the letter because it was a very hard business to run. And 10 days after I closed my Positive Changes business, where I specialized in weight loss, I opened Susie Pruden International and specialized in entrepreneurs and life changes and kept going. And 2014, Itty Bitty came along in my mind, so to speak, and I decided I didn't really want to do the coaching and the hypnosis for a while. And I put it aside. And then this year, now I have Itty Bitty, and it's going incredibly well. But people keep calling me from the past saying, Susie, are you still doing hypnosis? And I've been saying no, but I will. And now I'm just saying yes. And so I'm bringing back my hypno-coaching, which is a unique term that I created in 2008 when I took a coaching course because I was losing my hypnosis business. And then I said, wait a second. Why don't I just combine what I'm learning in the coaching course with what I know in hypnosis? And so I remember the first week after I took the coaching course when I combined hypnosis with it and marketed it, and I took in $4,500 that week. And I went, yes, this is a very good idea. And I did that until December of 2014 when I just wanted to put it down for a while. I was tired. And now I'm ready to start up again. And I'm very excited because I put out a notice to all my people from the last 15 years. I have so many emails from people says, yes, I want to restart again. Yes, I've got other issues. Yes, I'm scared today. Yes, my thing, it's not working out for me the way I thought it would be in January. And now we're at this time of the year and people are scared. People are angry. People's emotions are all over the place. And what we do with hypno coaching is I can't change what people are going through, but I can help them go through it in a way that they're not really upset. So, and by changing the mind so people are feeling better, it'll be easier getting through this time. And the fear level will go way, way down. So people are having an easier time living in themselves. I was talking to a client the other day who was not in good shape that day. And I said, do you feel like you just want to unzip yourself and get out? And she started to laugh. She said, how did you know that's exactly how I feel? I said, well, because I've been there. And I know that when my emotions are all over the place and I'm upset and I can't handle my life, that I just want to unzip myself and get out. But instead I use self-hypnosis and I change my mind and I don't change my reality of the moment, but I change how I go through my reality so that my reality changes.
Mm. which is so true. And as we know as well, that when you're under stress and anxiety, it's proven that it's scientifically proven that your immune system is lowered.
Yes.
That, you know, your health and wellness are affected, not just your mental health, but your physical health as well. And this is what so many people, I believe, are going through right now. What I love about, first of all, I've listened to a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot. I would say a medium amount of hypnosis programs, and some very, very fine ones as well. But you are absolutely amazing. Your voice, you have this ability to, when I'm listening to you, and that's what it is, I'm at that point when I'm listening to one of your downloads, like we're offering some of the downloads in this package, but you just have this ability really to tap into people where it's a center within us. And I don't know how to explain that exactly, but it's a center within us that you are able to reach. And I don't know what it's called.
I don't either. Yeah, it's a gift.
Yeah, it is.
My voice changes. This is my speaking voice.
Yes. Oh, this is different than
this is not my inner mind voice. And I changed the program from hypno coaching to inner mind coaching. So a lot of people don't understand what hypnosis is and they get scared. And all hypnosis is a deep state of relaxation where the subconscious mind takes on a heightened sense of awareness to take in the suggestions and make the changes that the self wants to make. It's very important to know that whoever is listening to a process will not do what they don't want to do. Period.
Exactly. Right.
So, and that's interesting because when I went to Shelley to stop smoking, I really didn't want to stop smoking. So I didn't, it took me forever to stop smoking. It was like, okay, Shelley, I'm back. Let's see if we can get this subconscious mind to agree with the suggestions. And finally it did. It was sort of like, uncle, I give up. I'll stop. And it was just one of those things where I went, oh no, I don't really want that anymore. And it was done. The changes that you make when you access the subconscious are monumental. And it's almost as if you're not making any change. For example, I used to eat potato chips all the time. And I made myself a CD so that I would stop. Notice that's a while ago. I'm using the term CD. And I made myself a CD. And one day, soon after, I was in the market. And I went to reach for the potato chips. And then I said, I don't want them. Which annoyed me because I wanted to want them because I like them. And I reached, I know, I reached again. And I went, I really don't want them. Wow, it works. Now, I've been doing hypnosis for 20 years before I had this aha. It's like, oh, it really works. Yeah, it really does. And I stopped eating them. And it was amazing because it wasn't hard. And when I had my hypnosis centers and people would come to me for weight loss and they'd say, I'm not eating all the stuff that I used to eat and I don't want it anymore. I said, yeah, I know. And they said, but it's not hard. I said, yeah, I know. And said, but it's magical. I said, yeah, I know.
Yes, I know.
And I said, that's why we do this, because it works. And the other interesting thing is that the changes will be made according to what you want. And you have to keep doing it. It's not like people used to come to me and say, can you give me one weight loss session and I can lose 50 pounds? No. No, you can't do that. If you could, I'd be a multi-gazillionaire. But it takes time. And change takes time. The change itself takes an instant, but it's the resistance to change and it's the continuous reviewing, so to speak, what you need so that the change can be permanent. And it's like with the various things that I've changed in my life, like the smoking thing, it's like gone. I mean, completely. It's got to be at least 20 years.
Wow. And so the idea here is that you're communicating with your clients, with people that take the inner mind coaching that work with you, you're speaking to the subconscious mind And I think people maybe need a little bit of help understanding, wrapping their head around what the conscious mind and the subconscious mind, because again, I kind of make it equivalent to someone saying, well, of course I want to be successful in business. Of course I want to have a loving relationship. Of course I want to feel good in my body and not carry excess weight that makes me feel uncomfortable. Of course. But that's what our conscious mind is thinking, correct?
Exactly.
So let's talk about the subconscious. What's going on back there? Because that's the captain of the ship, is my understanding.
That is.